And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be this one. That'd be Alabama. I'm talking about this show goes like way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, to parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, I got this. There's three stories. They're not related, but they kind of are because they deal with the people who serve us, and they're individually unique and weird. And I just want to mention them. The one is tragic. It's in Birmingham. A story broke just a little while ago. You may have heard that a few days ago, last Wednesday. Today is Tuesday, so less than a week ago, somebody walked into, and I don't know if they've been determined if they've got, caught the shooter, but somebody walked into fire station number 9 in the Norwood area of Birmingham and shot two firemen who were there servicing the in the bay. And anyway, one of them just passed away from his injury today. I thought that was worth noting. I mean, I just think those are, you know, our first responders, our men and women in blue and those who serve in fire and EMS, we can't do without you. And it just struck me as worth noting that firefighter Jordan Melton, who was a rookie, basically, he graduated from the academy less than a year ago, was working with Birmingham Fire and Rescue at station number 9. Died today from his injury. So I just want to make mention of that and honor his service. And I don't know the extenuating circumstances. There's some who say it was random, some who say it was a targeted shooting, that somebody had a grievance against one of the two guys that was shot. I don't know. All I know is this guy was serving his community in Birmingham Fire. And anyway, he's gone now. So there's that. The other is, of the three stories, is just bizarre. So if you haven't seen it yet, apparently, a U.S. service member is now being detained by North Korea. What? Yes. But what really caught my attention was, I mean, this to me is it's an international incident. Yes, it is. It's a big deal. Oh, yes, it is. Don't underestimate this as being a big deal. But what we're finding out now, because the Biden administration is saying so, is that this was a troubled troop, all right? This is a guy who I look at this and think, why was that necessary? Somebody may argue with me that, Phil, they got to say this to help defuse the situation. Well, okay. What they're saying now is this young troop, he was an E-2, which for those who don't know means he was a private, and he was not a mosquito wing private. He was not a private first class. He was just a private E-2. And that he was on a tour of the DMZ area, but that he was also soon to be discharged from military service for conduct unbecoming. I don't know in what extent, but he was looking at an administrative discharge from the service before his contract was up. They were getting rid of him, basically. He was being boarded out. But for reasons we don't know, they're saying now he intentionally, willfully, and against orders went across the DMZ. What? I mean, was he facing judicial punishment like he was going to go to jail? I don't know. All I know is we have now announced that we've got a reckless troop who was soon to be discharged with, I think, would have been personal information. And then, hey, North Korea, by the way, you're wrong, but we're too busy focusing on the fact that our guy was wrong. I see it just the opposite. Give us our guy back. That's what we need to say. Give us our guy back, and then we go from there. In the meantime, the Biden administration decides to go ahead and air that troop's dirty laundry and make sure the world knows that it was his fault. Okay. The last one is of a different ilk altogether. Charlene brought this attention to my attention this morning. I just saw it up on the news earlier, and I want to investigate more so I can maybe do it some better justice on the show. But the family members of the 13 service members who died at the gate of the Kabul airport when the suicide bombing went off, you know, during that whole debacle of a pullout that you know, just, and by the way, a lot of Afghans died too, but 13 of our service members died there. The families of those 13 are saying they've been denied the opportunity for closure. They can't get the personal effects back of their respective soldiers or Marines. And I don't understand that at all. How do you, 2 years later, still have the personal effects of a deceased soldier. To what end? What would the point of that be? And then they also want to know who's going to be held accountable for that, because no one has ever taken responsibility. And I agree. And I look at it and think, how many things are we going to have just shoved aside, like cocaine in the White House or the transgender shooters manifesto from Tennessee? Or for this matter, what about why is it that no one in the U.S. military was required to take responsibility for a failed debacle of a pullout that resulted in 13 deaths? I don't know that there have been many days in the 20-year war that we saw 13 deaths. I know there wasn't. There were occasional moments like Operation Red Wings and some others, but yeah, this was needless and the families want answers. So I'll be digging into that more. Anyway, there's three versions of people who served and weird stories that have come up about them in the last few days, and I thought that was all worth noting. So forgive me for that. It almost became a mini dipper there, Boo. I don't just take it and run, I guess.
Well, that was a good mini dipper.
Okay.
Extra credit.
All right, thank you. John, are you listening? John, I want my extra credit. All right, a couple of text messages, and then we might wind up taking a break a tad early. Frank from Huntsville. He says, President Trump, that's the other story. Here's a breaking news event. This just happened. Thanks, Frank, for reminding me. Story just broke in the last few minutes that apparently we're not done with January 6th yet. You heard me. So President Trump has now announced that he has received a letter that he is required to come and give grand jury testimony in a DOJ January 6th investigation. Really? Really? Apparently now we're going to keep this train. And the Democrats, CNN is like, whoop, whoop, we get to go back to January 6th, you know, like a bunch of crack addicts finding a rock on the street. And so, yeah, here we go. But yeah, President Biden or President Trump has now received notice that he's required to come give January 6th grand jury testimony. To what end? Is he a target himself? Some say he's a target. Some say he's just providing background. Look for a subpoena to try and quash that subpoena. We'll see what happens. Not for a subpoena, but a motion to try and quash that subpoena. What else we got in here? Teresa from Town Creek just sent me an image, and it says a new team's been called in to investigate the cocaine at the White House, and it shows the Scooby-Doo crew standing in front of the White House. That's hilarious. And we'd have got it, too, if it wasn't for those darn kids. And their dog. Darlene just sent in from formerly of Gadsden, now from Illinois, says, did you see California Democrats voted down a child sex trafficking bill to increase penalties? Yes, I did, my friend. I sure did. Trina from Elkmont says, regarding the Korean thing, supposedly he was held in a South Korean jail for getting into a fight. He was then supposed to report back to Fort Bliss. I think that's when he dressed in civilian clothes and joined a tourist group, broke away from the group, and crossed into North Korea. Okay. And the whole thing's a mess. We'll see where it goes. And then Tony from Piedmont just sent me a meme. and it has a picture of Karine Jean-Pierre with white powder on her nose. And it says, we did find a small amount of cocaine, but it's removed by a technique called the Marion Barry. just wow. All right, I'll tell you what, Boomer, here we are about 2 minutes ahead of schedule. Let's go ahead and take the break right now. That way I can come back and jump right into the dipper. We're going to go down to coloring inside the lines, talking about these new congressional district lines. The legislature convened in special session yesterday, and they got their work cut out for them. And we'll see what the results play out to. But the new map is out, the one that got voted on. Democrats don't like it. Go figure. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. All right, we're jumping into the dipper here. By the way, keep in mind, the top of the hour, we'll switch over and take a call from Jeff Poor, who has been monitoring things on behalf of 1819 News and probably for his own show, the Jeff Poor Show, down in Mobile, on all of the redrawing of the lines. It's pretty amazing, and I'm trying to figure out. I just saw a tweet that came out, like, during the break. I just saw a tweet that came out, oh, gosh, when was this? In the last hour, I guess? The last 10 minutes or so. Anyway, within the last hour, I know this tweet came out from Erin Davis, who I think works for WSFA down in Montgomery. And she's saying that Republicans dropped in two different maps, one in the Senate and one in the House. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. I don't know why they would do that. So here's the thing. Let me just refresh you on the situation. You may recall that this is back in June, that the Supreme Court invalidated the congressional maps. Every 10 years, the census is done. Based on the census, you have to go to what's called reapportionment. Reapportionment is when the legislative body of the states have to redraw the different lines, state legislature lines, school board lines, and congressional lines. And they have to do it based on population. So like right now in Alabama, in order for there to be seven congressional districts, which is what we're allowed to have based on our population size, we have what, like 5.2 million people? So we have seven congressional districts. To make it fit, they have to have roughly, I think it's 774,000-ish people per district. But then subject to the Voting Rights Act, you can't just draw the lines in a way that disenfranchises one demographic over another. With the general, you know, the general application of that is especially black voters wind up being, because they're a minority, they wind up being the ones who more often than not feel as though they've been disenfranchised in the process of drawing the lines. In Alabama, we have one Democrat serving our congressional delegation, just one. And that is Congresswoman Terry Sewell. But the reality is, she's a black woman herself, and she's in a majority black district. Not overwhelmingly, I think she has like 57% black potential voters, and so the courts just came back and said, yeah, those lines that you draw, that you drew back in the 2020 census, you got to do that again. What? The case is called Allen v. Milliken, and on a 5-4 decision, very close. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Brett Kavanaugh sided with the liberal side of the court and agreed that somehow or another, Alabama had violated the key provision of the Voting Rights Act. How? Because they say you diluted the ability for black voters to know based upon their population size in the state. I think overall the state has like 27% black population. Not all are voters, but that's the black population size. That they've determined that somehow that means we need to have at least two districts that are divided in such a way that black citizens would have a near equal or even a majority ability to vote racially. And that's what gets me. That's what gets so many people. We're looking at this going, you've told us for years that we can't be racist. So we chose to be race neutral, which, by the way, the maps that were drawn in 2020, they were almost identical to the maps we've had in place since 1992, I think. And like, what the heck? Okay, so now we got to redraw them. And you got to redraw them quick because all the congressional races qualify for their positions in, I think, October of this year or November of this year at the latest. So that being said, they got to get busy. The only way this happens for the governor to call the legislature in for a special session, because they can't call themselves in, the governor has to do it. So she called them in for this week. And here they are. Now, when they drew this, they didn't say it has to be a majority black district. That's not what the court said. My recollection, and I'm looking at an article here from CBS, that they have to include a second district that gives black voters a near or at equal opportunity to elect their favored candidate. That's what Chief Justice Roberts said. Huh. So how do we do that? Well, Justice Thomas, who's a black man, by the way, wrote a dissent. He did not agree with this. He said, this fossilizes all the worst aspects of our long, deplorable vote dilution jurisprudence. Meaning, you just changed the game. You just locked everything up. He says it goes out of the way to reaffirm Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act applicability to single-member districting plans. And what he means by that is you're not helping here. You're saying we have to make race a bigger deal. All right, so here's what. So what now? So they had last week they held hearings, and Democrats are mad because they say, oh, they're keeping us in the dark. We don't know what's happening. Yes, you do. Yes, you know as much as anybody else in the party, except for those who are actually in the caucuses, except for those who are on the committees themselves. And oh, by the way, you've got membership on the reapportionment committee. It's not like it was Republican only. But a new congressional map did come out, and it's what's now been voted on to go forward in the House. It says on Monday, a new congressional map that does not pit any incumbents against each other was approved by the Permanent Legislative Committee on Reapportionment. Story here on 1819 News that came out yesterday. By the way, that's another important piece. We have 7 congressional districts. That means we have 7 incumbents that want to run for their seat again. They've all announced their intent to run again. Except that when you redraw the lines, you begin to wonder, oh my gosh, can we do this in such a way that we're not drawing 2 of them together? Well, the Democrats love that idea. They want to draw districts 1 and 2 down in South Alabama. That'd be Congressman Jerry Carl from Mobile and Congressman Barry Moore, who's been on the show multiple times, from Coffee County, down towards Dothan area. So they want to know, can we draw, hey, here's our idea. Our map says that Jerry Carl and Barry Moore have to live in the same district now. Really? That's fun. Look what you just did. Well, the Democrats got their plan, but the Republicans came out with their map, and their map does not make those 2 congressmen run in the same district, but it does draw the numbers in such a way that it could be construed that they've got a better, you know, heavier black percentage. So here's the deal. With the House voted out, it's not majority black. They took Terry Sewell's district, which had like 57%. They knocked it down to like 51.5% to 52% black. And they took what was Barry Moore's district number 2, and they drew it up to where it now has, I want to say, 42.5% to 43% black. Okay. So is that enough? I don't know. What's the court going to say? Here's what Republican Chris Pringle says. As was said earlier in this committee, there are districts that can be drawn that may not be majority, but the performance analysis will prove they can elect Democrats or Republicans. They're opportunity districts. The problem we're going to have is the court didn't say drawn by party. They said drawn by race. So I don't know if this is going to stand. Then Democrat Roger Smitherman from the Senate, who's black, said, I think this may very well put us in a situation where a standing master, that's what the court has to do, has to address that issue. I see we got a considerable amount of gerrymandering going into areas to provide a necessary population in terms of African American or sheer numbers in terms of the makeup. I'm seriously concerned, he says, about whole counties. Well, first of all, we're required to gerrymander now. We're required to change things up. We're required to make sure that we have drawn the districts differently. And most people really want counties to be as in whole as possible. So I'm looking at a copy of the map, holding it up to the camera right now for those of you that are watching. I'm looking at the map, and right now I can only see 1, 2, 3, 4, roughly 4, 5. I can see 5, maybe 6 counties out of 67 that are not completely intact as part of one district. We'll see, y'all. It's a nut roll. But in a minute, we'll come back and talk with Jeff Poore about it. See what he thinks. But I'm looking at the racial demographic breakdown, and y'all, this is almost impossible to do. And what may wind up happening is they don't like it, so the court takes over, draws the lines themselves, says, here, go live with it. I don't know. We'll see. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios, man. We got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. All right, listen, we're going to the phones right now. Our frequent flyer here on the show, Jeff Poor, who's host of the Jeff Poor Show down on FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile. He's also, by the way, the editor-in-chief at 1819 News. He's on the line with us. Jeff Poor, how you doing, buddy? Do I have him?
He's muted.
Jeff Poor, you would be muted right now. If he... Wow.
Hell, I'm not.
There you are.
I don't know what was going on there. Huh?
But technical. We'll just call it technical. It's all technical. Very technical. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Good. You in Montgomery today, or what are you doing?
I'm at home. I'm going to head up tomorrow.
Well, so I'm catching up on things, and I'm seeing, like, in the last hour, Erin Davis, who I think is with WSFA out of Montgomery, but she just tweeted out a brand new set of these maps and says that there's two maps now that Republicans are voting. In the House, the one that I thought we were going to go with, Chris Pringle's map, it's got the division of counties laid out. But now, did Steve Livingston from the Senate drop in a separate map?
He did. Some subtle changes. I guess the most important change with Steve Livingston's map is he tries to keep the Black Belt more intact and keeps two. I mean, it's almost, with the exception of some things in 7 and 6, it's almost identical to what we have right now.
Well, not what she's showing on her. She tweeted this out, and she said that Livingston's map actually reduces the Black population to 38% in District 2. That can't be right.
Right.
Is that a typo, or is that real?
No, that's right. They think they could get away with that.
No, man, I'm telling you, I don't know, but I'm betting with the numbers in Pringle's map at 45% Black in District 2 and 51.5% in District 7. That's closer to what they're going to have to do, I would think. I just I can't fathom this.
Here's a school of thought that the federal courts are going to come in and do this for us anyway. So why make it easy for them?
Well, right now I can tell you too. I'm just looking at it, and for the very first time, Livingston's map actually divides Etowah County, where I live, and puts me into Congressional District 3 for
right.
the first time, maybe in ever.
Right, so you're in there with, yes, this is against the wishes of Craig Ford, but you're in there with Mike Rogers.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with this. But, okay, so bottom line is this. Let me ask you a question. My interpretation of the court's ruling, and I partly from memory and partly from looking at a series of articles, some of which were published by y'all, is we're not required to have an absolute Black majority in every district, or at least two districts. We have to give them what he calls an equal opportunity. And that might mean close to 50%, roughly, if it close somewhere in that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's exactly the way to interpret it. But I don't think this gets you there with Steve Livingston's map, because I mean, Black turnout being lower is not really an opportunity. I don't think 38% gets you there at all.
No.
I don't know what you're thinking. I know that. I got to think we're going to be hearing from Bobby Singleton and Roger Smitherman a lot on the Senate map. And I'm surprised that they haven't shut everything down over this map.
Well, that's what's going to happen. I mean, I look at this and think all you did was inflame the passions of the people who were against your maps no matter what you did anyway. You just gave them ammunition. I do not get this at all. Not at all, brother.
I mean, I like this map, but I know it's just not going to be good enough for the courts.
You do like this map? Why do you like it?
Well, I like it better than the other map. I like preserving District 2 as a Wiregrass district, number one. I mean, I'm not crazy about Etowah. Well, only because Craig Ford doesn't want it. I guess I could be for Etowah County being in District 3. Other than that, I could go either way. But also, you look at the first congressional district. Right now, Jerry Carl's got Washington, Clark at Monroe, and essentially what they do is they take those, give those to the black belt, and the first congressional district kind of takes Covington County, where Andalusia and Opp are, away from that. And that makes more sense to me. But that's, I guess you protect Terry Sewell with seven and the way it's drawn. But I don't think it's going to be good to go. It does not accomplish what we were told we needed to accomplish.
No, I agree. I look at this first round, and I'm just the opposite. I see the map that the House voted out. And I know that the listeners, radio does no good because we're talking about maps y'all can't see right now. But I think that the House version, and partly, I'll be honest with you, he may be Craig Ford as mayor of Gadsden, former minority leader in the House, somebody who I oppose multiple times politically. But I agree with him. I also don't want to see my county split by this sudden surprise. But I do get it.
Well,
why would they not,
unite,
though? Why would they not
unite?
Let me
ask you this, because you would know better. Are you just opposed to being in AL3 altogether, or would you rather be in Adderholtz district?
No, I think we would rather be in Adderholtz district because that's who we've worked with for years, and he's been very helpful to a number of things. We're actually right now, Etowah is the most populous county in his entire 4th congressional district, which gives us a lot of attention. Now, I'm talking about one county right now, but I look at the big picture, and I still can't figure out why the House plan is not better than the Senate plan on numbers, on layout. It keeps more counties intact.
On two, it's important because you put all of Montgomery and all of Dallas County in AL2, and you're just setting up, I think, a Stephen Reed, Barry Moore congressional showdown. I think that the Livingston map protects the incumbents, and the Pringle map doesn't. Now, I know that's not a point of the court, but it protects the incumbents, and it's better for the state. Now, I can see where you take issue with Etowah County, but if you just look at it, you take that out of the equation, it looks like a map to me that I could get along with.
Well, I guess we'll see. Let me ask you this. What's your prediction? You've been saying all along you think we're going to wind up with a court having to appoint a special master to draw the lines for us. What do you think?
So something happened along the way, and I think this is really what happened. I've been told it isn't, but that they stopped listening to Dorman Walker and started listening to Steve Marshall. And Steve Marshall, I think, wants another crack at the Supreme Court. And they think they could flip Kavanaugh. So they were arguing on the merits. They were arguing on the merits to vote. I mean, they were arguing about the Voting Rights Act itself, the interpretation of the Voting Rights Act, and whether you take into account a race as a factor when you draw maps. But could you not make that the case? Could you argue the constitutionality of the Voting Rights Act and the power it takes from the state legislatures? And I mean, is it still in the 1960s in Alabama, or do we still need these protections? Do we still need federal government oversight? But I think it goes back to the court. I think it's very, very risky what might be going on here, that if they do go and they try to get it in the Supreme Court, try to get it flipped, that inevitably it's going to be, no, you can't get it done. We're assigning a special master, and you're going to have somebody from New Jersey, some academic from Princeton or wherever, drawing your map for you. We're not going to take into any political considerations into account. That's trouble, but that's the risk.
Okay, so you're the second person in the last 2 days who has told me that Steve Marshall is actually in the mix right now. So what you're telling me, I guess to summarize what you just said, you think that Marshall is saying, hey, draw this version, which we may then wind up having to get a special master, which we then can appeal the special master and go right back up to the Supreme Court again, assuming they'll take it up, by the way, and then maybe flip Kavanaugh and get a split vote, or at the very least get a vote that might even go in our favor on a second round. You think they can go that far? You think that's what Marshall's up to, huh?
I think it's just the best bet. I don't know that these maps, especially the Pringle map, I mean, I think it hurts Alabama as a six. You're either going to get 6-1, some people say 7-0, but I don't know, or you're going to get 5-2, and 5-2 is looking pretty likely right now. One way to stop that is probably the strongest way to stop that is the court route. Now, we may be stuck with this map for a cycle, whatever the courts decide. But, yeah, I do think you get another shot at Supreme Court, because you do have Supreme Court opinions now that you could go back and you know what they're looking for and you can make those arguments.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic. All said and done, the legislature's in this week and they're in all 5 days. And now we got competing maps, which, by the way, I also find interesting. You'd think that with something this heavy that they would have gotten House and Senate leadership together and said, let's pick a map. Which one do we want to go with? But instead, we got competing maps from the Republican supermajority, House and Senate. I find that to be onerous.
What I've been told is that Livy's just been frustrated with the way Pringle's been running the House. That they haven't, I wouldn't say they've been butting heads, but there's some friction there. I don't know you necessarily had this kind of friction when McClendon was the Senate guy.
There's
some friction there, yeah, and that's what's led to the two separate maps.
Oh, my gosh. All it does is make us look like we don't have our act together, which...
Well, we don't. I mean, we don't.
If you look at it, we don't. That's right.
Senator, there's no reason to think that they were going to get this right. I mean, I know that the court would prefer the legislature to do it, but they just... Look at what they're doing with the prisons. There's just no reason to think that with these competing issues and the big mules and these incumbents and all of these different things that they're going to be able to please everybody.
Well, it's gonna be a nut roll, brother. And I guess for you and I, being pundits, we got a target-rich environment right now.
Well, and this is what's important because this is going to change the state forever, guys. Because these maps we're using now were done decades ago. If you suddenly build in two swing districts, Senator, I mean, just think how we're going to have a competitive election cycle every 2 years. We're going to be inundated with ads. Yep. We're going to have a consultant class that's out of control. It's going to be very expensive to do politics in Alabama, and it's not exactly a science that a lot of people know about.
But the radio shows will have plenty to talk about, though, right?
Yeah, and we'll get it all wrong through and throughout.
All right, brother. Hey, I appreciate your time. Thanks for shedding some light on a few things, and I think we'll be staying in touch on this one.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, see you, man. That was Jeff Poor, FM Talk 106.5 down yonder in Mobile, host of the Jeff Poor Show. Very politically savvy. Interesting dynamic there that we are looking right now at two different maps. Republicans, House, and Senate have two different versions of what to do. And, oh, by the way, we're also thinking that maybe Steve Marshall, our attorney general, has an angle that says, go with the map that'll make them mad. Maybe we can go back to the Supreme Court and try again. I don't know, man. It's going to be something. Y'all stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Hey, tell you what, we're going to go to the phones real quick. Same topic, we're talking about coloring inside the lines. Jeff from Indiana is on line one. Hey, Jeff Rowe, how you doing, man?
Doing good, Phil.
Good, good, good. What's your thinking?
Hey, from now on, you can no longer say that America is not systemically racist.
Because we are mandated to be systemically racist in our politics at the very least, right?
It's systemically racist, but it's systemically racist against white people. So that's what you need. So next time somebody brings this up and everything, that's what you need to tell them. Say, yes, you're exactly right, but it's not racist against black. It's racist against white and other races.
You know what? This is a situation that's
going
to affect – there's multiple states. I think Louisiana and Texas and North Carolina all have cases right now that the decision about what's happened with Alabama redrawing its lines is impacting those states as well.
Yeah. I still say my ideal is the best. I think you should just declare everyone in the state of Alabama to be ethnically black. And I'm halfway serious about that. What would the courts do? What would they say?
That, you know what? I don't know who makes the rules right now. What are we allowed to do? Because you look at it and think, okay, if I went in the military right now and decided to identify as a female, apparently they'll take me. If I went in the military and decided to identify as black, I don't know what they'd say. They'd probably court-martial me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you can change your sex, surely to goodness you can change your color. I mean, Barack Obama is just as white as he is black, but he identified as black. He could change and identify as white anytime if he wanted to.
Yeah, and apparently Kamala Harris is part Indian and part something else, and she identifies as a woman of color, apparently. So the rules are what they need them to be at the time.
Yeah, I mean, the rules are, as things go right now, the rules are what you say they are because, I mean, the government is all in for all this, pronouns and everything else. So, and they're letting men in the women's bathrooms and stuff. So if they can do that, you know, they can. If you can change your sex, you can surely change your race.
It boggles the mind, brother.
Just ask Pocahontas. She'll tell you all about it.
Which, by the way, out of all Trump's nicknames, that was my favorite one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that one fit real well.
Yeah, it did. All right, man. Hey, be safe on the road today, all right?
All right, Phil. You have a good one.
You too, buddy. Yeah, I don't know where we're headed here. I mean, I really thought they were going to be able to get it done. I think seeing competing maps at this late stage tells me that they don't have a clue yet what they're going to be able to get done. I also think that we're going to wind up seeing this thing probably have to go to conference committee because I bet the House is now going to pass what Pringle dropped in, and I bet the Senate's going to pass something like what Livingston, dropped in. Just when I think I can predict it, I get a curveball. But truth be told, they're not super happy. The legislators are not down there going, whoop, whoop, we're so glad to be in special session. I got an article here that also came from 1819 News where State Senate Pro Tem Greg Reed, who I've known for quite a while, says, I feel like the legislature did a good job and I'm frustrated that we're here. He said, we did a good job in 21, the process of doing what the people of Alabama had asked us to do. I felt like we moved forward with that in an appropriate way. Everyone seemed satisfied with it. I know the process has moved through a 3-judge panel to the Supreme Court, and they've given an order that we need to redo the maps, so here we are. Doesn't mean we're excited about it, but we're going to do our job. He says, the goal is we have to satisfy the court's order. I know for a fact, Steve Livingston, Senator Livingston from up in the Jackson County area, Scottsboro and all that area, he would not have dropped in this map without Senator Reed having seen it. Leadership is not going to go, what do you got? What'd you drop in? No, they're going to know ahead of time what's dropping in. So I have to question how this is breaking down behind the scenes. And I've been there for some of these discussions in the past on other redistricting, but this one's got me bumfuddled, man. Got me bumfuddled. We'll see. All right, hey, listen, we're going to switch gears. In a minute, we're going to come back, and you know the deal. I'm out there resourcing the show early in the morning, and I'm like, wokeness. Wokeness everywhere. It's raining wokeness. I mean, talking like wokeness neck deep. And what you wind up with is some things that'll make you roll your eyes, some will make you want to throw your radio, and we wind up having to put together adventures in woke world, and that'll be coming up right after the break. So you guys stay tuned for that. And then top of the hour, we're going to switch gears and go to part two of sharing the battle space. What other conservative groups are out there marching to the beat of a different drum or the same drum right here in the state? We'll talk to one, a guy named Adam Thompson with Americans for Prosperity at 4 o'clock. All right, you guys, stay tuned. We will be right back.